Welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now, a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of kptz.org.
Hello, this is Deborah Kelso, host of this edition of Nature Now for the first week of December. And we are very fortunate this week to have Dr. Fred Sharp with us again on the radio. Fred is a very accomplished naturalist and biologist. He could talk to you about any variety of species in the natural world, but today we've caught him on his way to a major marine mammal conference down in California. So he's going to be representing there his organization, the Alaska Whale Foundation. We thought that we would get an update straight from the horse's mouth on our lovely humpback whale population. Welcome, Fred.
Hey, Deborah. Pleasure to be here.
First, we should probably introduce your piece. You sent us some great acoustics. You sent us a great feeding call from the whales. We'll start off with that. That seems like a lovely way to introduce the topic of humpback whales. We saw a bunch in this area, Fred, this summer. Can you tell us a little bit about why we're seeing so many here?
Well, it's so incredibly exciting to get all of these reports of humpback whales moving into our waters. And, of course, they were once very numerous around here. Tragically, at the beginning of the last century, there was an intensive commercial whaling industry in these waters. And there were several whaling stations, one out at Grays Harbor. There was a couple on the outer coast on Vancouver Island. And there was one in the inland waters here in the Straits of Georgia. And that was the era of steam-powered catcher boats and exploding-tipped harpoons. And within a few years, they completely depleted our local population of humpback whales.
When did that happen, Fred? That's so amazing to think of now, that we would have enough whales for a whale hunt.
Yeah, that was about 1905, just around the turn of the last century when things really got going and there was lots of investors, and we'd already depleted some of the other species of whales, the sperm whales and right whales and bowheads. And so the industry was looking for other whale species and whale products, and they took hundreds and hundreds of whales out of our local waters, and the Grays Harbor Station took over 2,000 whales.
Wow.
And tragically, they exhibit a lot of home range site fidelity during the summer months, and so they come back to the same areas and can really quickly not only deplete a population, but also the cultural knowledge associated with these whales. But that's why it's so exciting to hear that they're coming back, and it's been wonderful. You know, we run our boats up and down the coast over the years, and it seems like every year we just come into small bays and meet more and more people who come running down the dock and say, they're back, we had humpback whales here for the first time in recent memory. And so that's just what happens when you have a species that is very clever and innovative and has a very diverse diet, and you stop killing them, they're coming back.
Yeah, that's a really great story. So along with them coming back, I mean, they're coming back all over, right? There's a motion to delist them in most of their populations worldwide, right?
That's correct. There's 14 major populations of humpback whales around the world, and 10 of those are currently up for delisting from their endangered status on the endangered species list. It's super exciting because I guess those 50 years now or so ago, we decided to have a moratorium and not commercially utilize these animals anymore. Of course, after they were depleted, by the way. But it's really exciting when it's, you know, not just one individual or one nation, but an entire global community that says, hey, these animals are worth a lot more to us as living, breathing commodities and parts of these complex ocean ecosystems, and it means that our Earth is still relatively healthy, that these major predators can come back from their extinction back to their enormous numbers, and it bodes very well for humanity going forward in that when we decide something's important and we work together as a global community, there's nothing we can't solve.
We would like to think that. It's good that that's happening in the whale population. Other populations aren't so fortunate, but it's good to have good news where we can find it.
You got it. In fact, there was also a fin whale this summer that showed up for several weeks in North Puget Sound, not far from our shores, between here and San Juan Island, feeding on the banks out there. And so even some of the more heavily depleted species are starting to show signs of recovery. I'm in favor of removing the humpback whales from the endangered species list. I feel like there's plenty of public awareness for the species, so it won't drop off the radar. And also there's some, as you mentioned, there's some terribly imperiled species still. One of them is the North Pacific right whale. In fact, we think there's only 30 individuals left in our part of the Pacific Ocean. They were so heavily decimated. And I think there's over 30,000 humpbacks now. So we really need to redirect our resources towards those species, which are basically at an imminent risk of extinction.
That's horrible that there are only 30 individuals of right whales. What are they planning to do? I mean, what can they do to protect that population or to increase it?
Well, the National Marine Fisheries Service, they have sponsored a number of research cruises into the areas of where they intensively harvested. Also, they deploy remote hydrophones so they can listen to them for months at a time and pop those back up. And what we really need to do right now is just identify critical habitat. Where are they feeding? Where are they breeding? And then set up the protections of these areas. And unfortunately, we still have much to learn about the species. We are hopeful that there's a sustainable breeding population, and with more research and environmental awareness, we can also bring those back, the bright whales back from the brink.
We can hope for that. So what are the current concerns? Say it's delisted, but there are still a lot of issues that we need to be careful about with the whale populations, right?
You bet. You know, of course, we're no longer directly harvesting them for their products, but they still fall victims to a variety of human activities. That includes being hit by large ships. And we have one of the busiest seaways in the world out here in the Straits of Juan de Fuca. And that's right where the core of the population of humpback whales are showing the greatest recovery. There's an area, Constance Tank, off of Victoria, where there's been quite a few humpbacks showing up for the last decade or so. And now we're getting reports of them throughout Puget Sound. One season, two seasons here and there, but more and more every year. There's an investigator, Mark Mallison, who does a lot of photo ID off of Victoria. He's been following the mothers that come back in and bring their babies back. And so it's all very exciting, but we most certainly mustn't let our guard down. Another concern is that these animals become entangled in fishing gear. Part of my work in the research community is to assist in disentanglement of these animals when we get a call. We'll respond and see if the animal, try to find it, see if it's a candidate for release, and then we use specialized tools and techniques to help the animal out of the net and get him or her on their way.
Do you have a number, if people see whales that are entangled in fishing gear, is there a local number to call?
Yes, there sure is. We'll have it available at the end of the program.
And also, the problem of acoustic pollution is really hot with all whale species, right?
Humans are, we put lots of sounds into the oceans. Large ships transiting the ocean have increased the background levels of the ocean substantially. Also, industrial development, military sonar, seismic exploration. These all produce intensive sounds that can, some of them are so loud they can cause direct damage to the hearing apparatus of the whale if they're nearby. Other sounds can, like seismic exploration or low-frequency sonar used in navigation and interrogation environment by military vessels, they can actually induce a behavioral response in the animals, which they'll surface so quickly or dive so deep that they appear to be getting the bends. So there's been unfortunate episodes where we'll have a multi-species stranding in association with military exercises. We've come a long way in learning that sound can be, it can imperil these animals. The Office of Naval Research subsequently has funded lots of acoustic studies so we can better understand the problems with these animals. And you know, the Navy has actually become quite a good neighbor and a good steward of the oceans in many ways, and is certainly funding a lot of research so we can better manage these animals. Also, up in Alaska, we study the sounds that humpbacks make. They are humpbacks are one of the most vociferous of all the great whales. They produce a great variety of sounds, and there's concern that these important sounds may be masked by human noise, such as the ability to evade predators or find mates or find food resources. So one of the things that we do, we work out of a lighthouse called Five Finger Lighthouse. We sit up in the tower, and with my colleagues, Michelle Fournet and Don Barlow, we watch the whales as they move around, and using hydrophones, we simultaneously record the sounds that they make underwater, and we study the behavioral context with which the sounds are made in, and that way we can try to infer function. And then through the use of playback studies, we can test ideas about the, make predictions about how the whale should respond, and hopefully learn a little bit about if the sounds are associated with, oh, come here, or go away, or I want to form a group, or predator calls. And then we can better manage human sounds by knowing what these remarkable diversity of sounds that the whales use function for.
So there's also the major problem of the fishery depletion, right, and the impact that it has on food availability for the whales.
You bet. Humpback whales and other large whales do feed on many of the same food resources that we do. A big concern for humpback whales here in Puget Sound is the great reduction in the loss of the large runs of herring that used to spawn up near Cherry Point, up near Bellingham. That's a critical, one of our largest herring resources, and that has decreased markedly over the last several decades. Also, many of our smaller runs of herring. But it's kind of cool. Even despite the reduction in the herring, the humpback whales are showing an interest in repopulating these waters. Where I work up in Alaska, the humpback whales will also forage extensively, or at least certain individuals will forage extensively on species of salmonids, pink salmon and coho salmon. They typically take the younger juvenile stages, but humpbacks have also been seen to feed on pink salmon, which is our smallest of our five principal species of salmon. And so they're hungry too, darn tootin'.
Actually, weren't you telling me, you were telling me a story about the humpbacks actually becoming a pest around the hatcheries, right? One of the hatcheries up there was having trouble with humpbacks just kind of hanging out, waiting for the fingerlings.
You got it. They're very, very, very clever, intelligent animals, and they know a good deal when they see one. My colleague, Jan Straley, she's been working on this question, trying to help industry out and come up with solutions to minimize the impact of these whales on the hatchery runs. And you know, by doing simple remedial techniques, like instead of releasing all the fish at once, so you have this huge cloud of salmon, which are often a bit more naive coming out of a hatchery environment than wild fish, and so they can get mowed down by these whales. Also, by moving the pens around to release the salmon. And of course, up and along our coast here, we generally don't do ocean ranching per se with salmon farms, but these are more hatchery released and for the most part often using wild stock. So the whales know a good thing, though, when they come across it. And you know, we found out this year, though, that far more potentially impactful to wild salmon runs are oceanographic events, like that warm water blob that we had up in the North Pacific this past summer, and huge numbers of coho and king salmon. They just didn't return this year, and it was suspected that that may be associated to not so much with predators, but just primary productivity and ocean conditions.
And that's going to be something we're just going to have to monitor. I mean, it's going to be something that will change really slowly. It's a major problem for a lot of different species.
Indeed it is, and we need to remember, though, that when we have ability to look into the past and look how species have changed over time, there's lots of natural cycles, and the ocean environment is notorious for wide fluctuations in biomass and species composition. And so it can be part of natural processes, but we always need to be on guard because human activities can obviously greatly exacerbate these cycles, and through the reduction in available habitat and refuge, organisms can be even more imperiled by climate change. And that's why we're so excited to have a representative for Port Townsend, Laura Tucker, who went to the climate change conferences in Paris. Yay, Laura!
Yeah, we might have her on to report back to us as to what she's learned from that conference. And review for us with the whales. Our population is kind of on the borderline, right, between the two major populations. Some of them go to Hawaii and some of them go down to Baja for the winter.
That's right. We're at kind of an exciting spot here along the Pacific coast. Pretty much everything to the north of here, up through Vancouver Island, Southeast Alaska, Gulf of Alaska, Aleutian Islands, those are all predominantly Polynesian whales, and the majority of them go to Hawaii. But south of here, along the coast of Washington, Oregon, and California, most of those animals will head down to areas in islands off of Mexico and the Mexican coast. And there's also a small subpopulation that goes all the way down and winters in Panama from this area. And that's kind of exciting because the Panamanian wintering population, that is also used by Antarctic whales that come up 6 months out of phase, but they come up from the Southern Ocean. So you really begin to appreciate that our whales are truly global citizens and global travelers.
And that helps with the genetic diversity, right? I mean, by the fact that they mix with those whales from Antarctica and come up here, that's a good thing for their population to remain plastic.
You bet. And you know, it's just been predicted by one of our colleagues, Scott Baker, who works at Oregon State University. He has estimated that probably on the order of 1 to 2 whales per year may jump hemispheres, which keeps some degree of genetic exchange. But it's kind of cool because each of our major populations throughout the globe, 14 major populations, all of them have quite high genetic diversity, suggesting that they came through the commercial whaling bottleneck intact. Although it is unusual in that the whales that go between Alaska and Hawaii, there it's a huge population, the third largest aggregation in the world. They, for some reason, have unusually low genetic diversity. It appears just one dispersing female in Alaska gave rise to almost the entire population of 15,000 whales that goes between Hawaii and Alaska. So there's always really interesting mysteries to try to solve with these animals.
Well, we're going to end with the social call that you sent us, that really cool kind of chuckling call. Is there anything that you want to say about that sound clip that you sent?
Are incredibly diverse and remarkable. We see them across a whole range of behavioral and social contexts. My colleague Michelle, she's identified over 16 unique call types within the population that we're studying. For the most part, we don't have any idea what they're saying yet, but they're certainly capable of a lot of sounds. They have almost a sort of a, I wouldn't call it language, but their songs can be very generative and syntactical, almost like human language. They break down into individual, we call it individual units, and potentially very similar to words. We use a lot of software that was developed for human speech to study whale communication and look for individual whale signatures. This call that you're, these series of calls that you're hearing were recorded around a bubble netting pod of whales. And these bubble net pods, they can have up to a dozen or more whales working together as a team with unique roles and tools and behavior with their bubble nets. So these animals potentially have a lot to say. So enjoy.
We will. And thank you so much for coming on to speak to us, and have a great time at the conference. And maybe we can get you back in next time you're around to give us an update on what you learned at the conference. A hot off the press news.
You bet. I'd be delighted. Thank you so much, Debron.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It's a double-crested cormorant, and I chose it for this week's Mystery Sound because of an amazing story about them that I was told this past week. Double-crested cormorants are a common resident species in our area. They're seen both on the coast or on the inland waters of western Washington. We see them singly or in small groups and bobbing in the water or diving for food or winging by with their kinked necks. Or characteristically, they're out on the pilings, you know, with their wings outstretched and drying their feathers. But we don't think of them as tree roosters, or at least I don't. It turns out that's just what they do down in Port Ludlow Bay. My friend Heidi Lepetito was telling me that she and her partner, Jeff Hammerson, were staying down at Port Ludlow, and Jeff is a really great biologist, naturalist, and he's sent us amazing observations before, and he's always out there looking and counting and recording, and he was watching these cormorants and noticed that they were roosting up at night. He counted almost 500 cormorants roosting up in trees at night down in Port Ludlow Bay. It's just so astonishing. I never realized that they would do that. And it's great to know that's right in our neighborhood, that that's happening. And so very few people have noticed it. So thanks very much to Jeff and Heidi for that observation. We have three species of cormorants in our area, but the double-crested is the only one likely to be seen in fresh water. And it's distinguished from the brants and the pelagic by their thicker bills and the pronounced kink in their long necks in flight. They get the name double-crested from the whitish tufts of feathers that the adults display behind their eyes in the breeding season. Oh, and the number to call if you see a whale entangled in fishing gear is 1-877-767-9425. And that's it for KPTC's Nature Now. Thanks very much for listening. And if you want to listen again, this program will be rebroadcast at 5 p.m. on Thursday, 11:30 on Saturday, and up as a podcast in a week or so at kptz.org. As always, happy trails.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman.
Today's closing music is A Little Baby Humpback Whale, performed by Brent Holmes.
It's a beautiful song that she knows well. He hums along as they ride the swell, waiting to see what the new day brings. He's a little baby humpback whale, and everything is new. He's a little baby humpback whale, swimming in the ocean blue by his mother's side. Sometimes he swims, sometimes he sleeps. Sometimes he tries to dive down deep. Sometimes he floats around in the morning sun. He loves the songs the old whale sing. He loves blowing bubbles in a ring. He loves to play with his friends when the day is done. He's a little baby humpback whale, and everything is new. He's a little baby humpback whale, swimming in the ocean blue.